You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of On the Vine, a podcast brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com, the podcast and website about Ivy League basketball. We're so glad to be back for our third season of podcasting excellence or something else. And we are going to be joining you all year long by breaking down each week of action in the Ivy League. I'm your host, Peter Andrews. My regular co-host, Mike Tony, who's also the editor-in-chief of the site, not available for the season opener, and we can all shame him later for missing out on this great episode. We are joined tonight by a robust panel nonetheless. You know him as Toothless Tiger on the site. He covers Princeton. And knows more about basketball than, well, it's a roundabout way of saying he's old. George Clark, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Peter. It's so good to see you guys, and happy to be ready to go for another season.
We are also joined by Ivy Hoops Online writer Rob Brown, who covers both Penn and Cornell. Rob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Peter. Glad to be back.
And our special guest this week, you know him on Twitter as at Ivy B-Ball. You also know him as someone who is a frequent target of commentary or in the Ivy basketball community, as someone who knows everything, or at least claims to, and he is here tonight to give us his wisdom. Michael James, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
All right. Let's get right to it. The season starts on Friday with all the teams in action. We're going to talk it through one team at a time, going down through the poll as we try to figure out which four teams will be in the Ivy League tournament this year. Not something that, and of course, immediately we lose Michael, so I'm going to try to reconnect him. Let's start by talking about Princeton. Princeton is, I would say, the overwhelming favorite to finish first this year in the league, and the reason for that is that they're not losing anyone. George, what do you think of the preseason prediction that Princeton will finish top of the table?
I'm delighted at that prospect. Not only do the Tigers not lose anyone, but they get back the young man who was expected to lead the team last year, was probably their best returning player, who went down 4 or 5 days before the season started, and that's Hans Brace. He's back along with 98% of the contributing minutes from last year. It's a problem most coaches would like to have, and I don't remember anybody ever facing this kind of a situation. The toughest thing for Mitch Henderson is going to be to find a rotation and keep everybody happy. Last year, Princeton went unbeaten at home, and as is always the case, the Tigers have a very difficult time attracting anybody to come to Jadwin Gym to play. As a result, the Tigers will spend the first month on the road against some very, very good competition starting Monday night at Brigham Young. In addition to Brigham Young, they play California, they play VCU, they play the perennial Patriot League contenders, Lafayette, Lehigh, and Bucknell. They don't get home until December 14th with St. Joe's, another very, very difficult team. So Mitch Henderson has said that this is the time to challenge his team in the out-of-conference schedule, and he is clearly doing that. If they get through the out-of-conference situation healthy and with a pretty good record, they'll be poised to make a deep run into the Ivy League season. Of course, this year there's a tournament. You can play very well all season and then go to the Palestra and stumble against Penn, which could very well happen. We'll talk about Penn a lot tonight. Very, very good team, up and coming. The scrap for the fourth place, the third and fourth places in the league this year, will be very, very spirited. bad news for Yale. We heard this morning Mekhi Nason will not play this year. So that opens up the league even wider than it was a day ago. So I like Princeton's chances clearly to make the tournament. They may very well have a dominant record in the league, but with the tournament, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we can start with the first. And I think that Princeton could very well end up being the strongest offensive team from an efficiency perspective that we've seen in the Pomeroy era, you know, maybe going all the way back to, you know, their 98 team. And frankly, being the strongest team the Ivies have seen in that era all the way back to the 98 team. So this is going to be a very, very good Princeton team. I don't think that there are a ton of flaws with this team, but if you look anywhere, it's going to be on the defensive side. You know, if you look last year, this team was outside the top 100 defensively, and that was, you know, to some extent bolstered by a strong free throw defense rate, which obviously is, you know, probably more likely than not to regress. So there's a lot of work to do on that end. And no matter how good this team gets offensively, and I think they could challenge that Cornell 2010 team for best offensive efficiency.
I guess my biggest, for me, they're head and shoulders above everybody. The only obstacle I think in their way is Harvard, just because they've got such an outstanding group of first years, and then you add in Chambers' return and Zena. It's a great team. That's going to be two excellent games. Outside of those two teams, there's a big difference between them and the rest of the league. I guess my question for George would be, where does Brace and Kennedy fit in the rotation? Are they on the bench or are they starting?
I think Brace starts and Cook sits to start. Kennedy does not start. I think you've got Weiss, Caruso, Miller, Brace, and Amir Bell will be the point guard to start, but the starting team is largely irrelevant with this team because there's so many options, and Mitch Henderson plays a lot of people anyway. So this year it'll be like musical chairs. But you mentioned Zena Adesamwan, and Harvard is the great unknown. Their recruiting class is beyond measure, probably the best that any team has enjoyed in the Ivy League ever. But they're unknown. We know what they did in high school. We know what Zena can do. We know what Cyani Chambers can do when he's playing at his best. So it would not surprise anybody if Harvard makes a very deep run in the Ivy League this year. The biggest difference – excuse me, Peter, go ahead. And the difference was Zena did not play in the first game at Jadwin. I think Princeton beat them by 20. And Princeton really had very little difficulty with Yale at home after losing a tough one in New Haven. And then Harvard was healthy when we got up there and the balloon was burst. So I would not be surprised if Harvard ends up being the big competition for the Tigers this year. But again, we don't know about Harvard. We know all there is to know about Princeton, and everybody's going to be aiming to shoot the Tigers down.
Certainly. I mean, I think that one of the players, I mean, there has been a fair deal of action to see now, obviously, with Crimson Madness, with the scrimmage against MIT. So there's a fair deal of a book on some of these freshmen now. And frankly, I think that, you know, Bryce Aiken is the one that really has popped most readily. You know, questions about whether or not he can play with Siani Chambers, with them both being very, very small. You know, Bryce Aiken is kind of a pest on defense. You know, you get the feeling that he can really play in that Brandon Curry role, and that was a pretty successful backcourt pairing between him and Chambers. So that actually could work for Harvard. Against bigger teams, against Princeton specifically in the guard area, they may struggle. But if there aren't two particularly large guards, they may be able to play together for long stretches, which I think would have been a surprise coming into the year. Seth Towns can score in so many ways. Just, you know, watching him play defense, I think there's still some work to be done there. But on offense, he's just such a matchup problem because he can score from the perimeter and really he can mix it up down low. So he's another one that I think is going to see a lot of time. Chris Lewis is, I believe, a little further along than Zena was when Zena came to Harvard as a freshman. I think that he has a bit of learning to do defensively. He's also not totally polished offensively, but I think he's a step ahead of where Zena was, and I really think he'll be able to contribute this year. And then you have some frosh that I think have surprised. You know, I think Robert Baker has shown some flashes. He's a little raw. He's a little undersized for what you need to be to compete at the Division I level. But my goodness, you know, he's made some jaw-dropping plays thus far, and I think that he could be an energy guy, especially defensively. And I think that that Christian Juzang, the point guard, almost sort of an afterthought of the class, really has shown some nice court vision, some ability to hit some shots, could be a nice combo guard option. I mean, so far, there's a lot of different Harvard freshmen that I think can play a role this year. The issue is, it seems to be that they haven't really learned how to play with these upperclassmen, the returning players. And I think that's going to hurt them to start the year. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. And sadly, some of Harvard's better games, easier games to really pick off some scalps are up front. So, you know, hopefully they can figure it out in a few games and save those GW at home and like Houston on the road, games where they can actually pick up some quality wins. They can be firing on all cylinders before they get to those games, because, you know, I think there's going to be some growing pains here, and it would be nice if that, for instance, Stanford game wasn't the opener.
No, I mean, I I feel pretty strong about Harvard. I think he's going to be able to integrate everyone really well. Chambers, as he said in the teleconference, Chambers is the leader of the team, and he steps right back into that role. And he's amazing at what he does and can get everybody involved. The freshmen are going to come along. I look at it more like the Ivy schedule. The non-conference is certainly important for some end-of-year 2-bit Ivy information. But if the goal is to get into the top four and win the conference, he's got a lot of time to get that group together and get them ready for the league. And then I think the first couple games they have, two against Dartmouth, Cornell, and Columbia. So they'll certainly be able to kind of get everybody ready into the Ivy weekends before they start having to deal with a team like Princeton.
Well, it should be really fascinating to see. Let me just before we move on to Yale, whether Mike or George has any other thoughts on Harvard.
I'm so scared of Harvard. I don't want to think about them yet. Harvard is in a great situation because they can, as Michael has suggested, they might have a tough time learning how to play with each other early. But by the time they get to the tournament, they might be playing very, very well, and anything can happen.
Yeah, a
two-game tournament.
I really think that when you're looking at freshmen, and this has been the case of Harvard teams that have been very aggressive defensively over time, Harvard gets better at playing Princeton when Harvard's players are older and they've seen Princeton more. Princeton is an odd team to defend relative to other Ivies, and this has been the case for a long time. They're a little less odd than they used to be, but they're still quite odd. And you can see how Harvard's on defense, younger Harvard players get surprised a lot by how Princeton plays offense. So I do think that the third time around, if they meet each other in the Ivy tournament, that may be an advantage to Harvard a little bit because they may now have seen this enough to know, you know, okay, I can't over-pursue. I'm going to get cut back. Like, there's things about that third time that Harvard plays Princeton that I think really do tilt their advantage. I think Princeton is pretty heavily favored to sweep the season series. But I think that third time could be very interesting because Harvard's going to learn a little bit during the course of the year, especially when it plays Princeton.
Michael, I think I was – pardon me, Peter. I hope you're right about sweeping this season series, but I can't – I've been to a lot of Harvard games up there. I don't think we've won since my youngest kid was in high school. That's quite a while ago.
I mean, I think it's the way the schedule stacks up, it's going to be brutal. You know, I thought Washington was a game they really would have a chance to get to start off the year on the right foot. I think this team is going to lose a lot of games to start. Frankly, this team could start, you know, something in the neighborhood of 0-6. It's just such a rough, it's a rough situation to throw, you know, what they're, I mean, basically, if you think about it, you know, they obviously lost the entire style of play they had last year, which was just to dominate people on the boards. And they're not going to have that. And now they lost their playmaker, who I think probably would have cruised to player of the year this year. I think this is going to be pretty ugly for Yale. They'll probably figure it out by Ivy play, which will help nobody. And I think they probably can still finish third or fourth and make the Ivy tournament. But my goodness, like this, they go from the team that I think would have probably potentially edged Harvard for second, all the way down to a team that I don't feel very good saying I'm confident they can make the tourney.
Let me just jump in here really quick to say I want to apologize for the listeners. There's been some sort of microphone issue with my microphone, and no one could hear me for some unknown length of time, which I have fixed, I think. I apologize for that. We're talking about Yale. We're talking about Mekhi Mason, who recently was injured. We're talking about how Yale could recover. George, Rob, your thoughts on Yale's fortunes?
Sure. For me, losing Mason is certainly
a
blow. Oh, sorry. George, go ahead.
My point is you lose Sherrod, you lose Sears, and you might have a chance to play without those two guys, but then you lose Mason. You just can't imagine losing those three players and still competing against Harvard and against our kids. Yale's going to have a tough year. It's ironic that Mason was injured scrimmaging James Jones's brother's team. That's really sad for those guys. To lose a player of the year caliber kind of guy is very bad for the league, and I'm saddened by that because he had such a great game against Baylor on national TV. He really put the league back on the map. It's a sad, sad thing.
Yeah, For me, you know, Mason's second team preseason all mid-major. Really, in some ways, he's the face of the league this year. It's a real big blow to Yale and the entire Ivy League. I guess I'm more positive about Yale. I think arguably they have the best coach in the league. James Jones has taken the team to the upper division, I think, 16 or 17 years in a row. And outside of Princeton, he probably has the best and most defined system, if you will. You know, as you said in the teleconference, rebounding, field goal defense, and sharing the ball. And he's really good at getting those guys to buy into the system. And he's got a bunch of really, really good freshmen. Jordan Brunner, who chose Yale over Clemson, is a pretty spectacular talent. And I think, again, like Harvard, by time Ivy League comes around, he's going to get that team in a lot better shape than they are right now. And I think I still think in some ways that they could be at the top of that middle pack.
Well, there's definitely space
there's definitely
to jockey,
space
around,
to
in
jockey
there.
Around in there.
Thoughts from anyone else on Yale before we keep rolling?
Yeah, I just think, you know, when you look at Yale, you know, you just sort of hope that the news stops with Mekhi Mason, because at this point they take any other injuries for any amount of time, you know, especially as the younger players are getting to, you know, get their first Division I experience, and this could get ugly fast. So you just got to hope that, you know, yes, Mekhi Mason's a huge loss. But they're pretty deep. But if they take another loss for any amount of time, they're going to have real issues with this brutal schedule up front.
Well, it should be fascinating to see this team try to fight through it. We were everyone, I think, was very happy to see Yale's success in the tournament, to see James Jones finally get over the hump. None more so than our own Ian. Halpern, the founder of this website, who is not on the podcast, but I'm sure we'll be hearing from him soon enough. So there's your top three, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. And now we get really into a mucky part
now we get weird.
Of the league. Now we get weird. And we're going to talk about the teams in the order of the poll, just to keep things simple. But that's not to say I agree with the poll, because I thought it interesting, the team that came in fourth, the University of Pennsylvania Quakers under Steve Donohue, which I don't believe won 10 basketball games last year. Picked to finish fourth in the league and to make the tournament at the Palestra. Second year of the Donohue era, they're losing Darian Nelson Henry, but bringing in a couple of well-regarded graduate transfers, pretty decent freshman class. Let me start by asking Mike, because I have been, as I just implied, a little bit surprised at the... At where the media and the fans placed Penn going the season. Do you think they're a bit over-optimistic, or is this right where Penn should be?
I think the problem here is that you can pick any team for fourth. So Penn is sort of that fun pick because it's at the Palestra, and maybe if you're an anti-tournament person, you can sort of say, look at what might happen here. They might finish fourth and get a home game, and the team that finishes first might have to play them. They are not the fourth best team in this league. There are way too many questions defensively. Steve Donohue has never been a great defensive coach, but the fact that they really have nothing to defend inside, you got to hope that the philosophy of just scaring people off the three-point line works and maybe they don't exploit you and take you to the hoop. I think it's going to get ugly defensively. There's no denying that he's brought in some of his guys who can really run his offense. I think they will be much better on that end of the floor. But this is going to be – and this kicks off the discussion of a lot of teams that are just going to be really ugly defensively. But I think that they're too ugly. I think that the Darian Nelson Henry loss is much bigger than anyone's giving – credit for, and I don't see them as my fourth best team in the Ivy, but that being said, as we said, it's so clustered down here, it's hard to say you're wrong, just not the team I would have picked for fourth.
So Rob, you cover Penn pretty closely. Can you give us a rundown of what we're looking at in terms of additions to the team this year that are expected to make some noise?
Right, so the biggest loss, obviously, as Mike said, was Nelson Henry. That's a pretty big loss. The in terms of gaining people, there's a kid McDonald who came from Fairleigh Dickinson, pretty good three-point shooter. I mean, typical for a Steve Donohue team, he's looking for three-pointers. As he's pointed out, he wants the team to he felt like going the route of traditional freshmen and building upon that was going to take too long to have success. So he went for a transfer and as well. A junior college transfer, Caleb Wood, who's done very well so far in scrimmaging and practice. Jackson Donohue came out of nowhere last year, so to do a great job at a guard position. Front court, A.J. Brodeur, really, really a lot of positives coming from him, so he's not ready to maybe take all of Darian Nelson Henry's stats, but he's going to be, the biggest guy they've got going down low. It's going to be a tough slog for them. But again, you look at all those teams in the middle and they're like one or two games separated from each other, especially in league play. So, is Penn the fourth best team? They may be, but that doesn't really say much at this point.
AJ Brodeur, I have to admit, I'm going to just call Martin Brodeur the entire season. Because
if he does as well as him, we'll take it.
Yeah, certainly. So, George, any comments on the arch rivals of Princeton?
We had such a difficult time last year with Penn. They might not have won 10 games, but the two they lost to us were unbelievable. I think we were down 11 with 3 minutes to go in the Palestra, and Amir Bell, who was having the game of his life, got hurt. Devin Kennedy came out of nowhere. We get into overtime and beat them on what a lot of people said was the worst officiated game they'd ever seen. That's the way it goes sometimes. And then the last game of the year, we're up 14 with 5 minutes to go, I think it was. And it got down to a one-possession game at the end. And Darian Nelson Henry, who wore us out through his career, fumbled the ball. And they didn't get a shot at the end. So I think Penn always scares me. And if they get into the tournament at their place and it's a big crowd, anything can happen.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Darian Nelson Henry's gone, so that's another big plus for Princeton this year.
Thank goodness, Michael. He just killed us over 4 years.
And if I'm not mistaken, in terms of the tournament, it's usually held around the time of Penn's spring break, so you don't think you have to worry about an excessively large Quaker crowd showing up at that point.
I think the dynamic...
Well, I hope you're right, but...
I do think that the dynamics surrounding the conference tournament, and I think this is sort of the subplot of the entire Ivy season, is who's going to make the tournament and what is it going to feel like to be there for the three games, and also the women's tournament going on at the same time. It is going to be something to see, you know, does having it at the Palestra, does that mean it's a Penn crowd? Does that mean that it's a... Or is it a full house even? Do we have an interesting mix of Ivy partisans? One thing I've always been fascinated with, like paint schemes on courts. Something I'm curious about: will the Ivy League spring for a floor paint scheme for this game that doesn't have a giant Penn logo in the middle of it? I would guess the answer is no, but. There are legitimate questions about Penn hosting the tournament and possibly coming in as a lower seed team. So that's something to watch. Any other thoughts as we continue the Steve Donohue era, just wrapping up the Penn section here?
Bueller. Well, my thought is, and Mike Tony is not here tonight, but he suggested that I should invite all of our listeners. And reset to be held in conjunction with the tournament.
So,
Michael
George,
has agreed
George,
that.
George, I your call cut out in such a way that you said, "I would like to invite all our listeners." There was a long period of silence. So, could you please repeat that?
I thought you were building suspense.
No, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. But Mike Tony is going to host the first annual Ivy Hoops Online tournament reception in Philadelphia at a site to be determined on Saturday night. And so I hope everybody's going to make a record.
Yes, we're all planning on being in town. And
did I cut out again?
You did cut out again, but I think we all got the gist at this point. Ivy Hoops Online reception in Philadelphia. If I'm there, you can bet that part of that will be a live episode of this podcast, because some of you I've never met in person, and I've heard that you're all taller than me, so I'd love to actually. We had a podcast last year where I introduced everyone by height, and it came out that at 6'1", I'm the shortest member of the regular Ivy Hoops Online crew.
I'm definitely shorter.
You have guys like Ian Halpern, whose brother played in the league, and he's, you know, 18 feet tall or something like that. Okay, that's enough waffle. Let's move on to the fifth place team, the team that I am uniquely qualified to comment on. So Penn, I wanted to stand corrected, Penn won 11 games last year. Columbia Lions won 25. They finished 25-10, 10-4 league record, good for third in the league, and then stormed through the collegeinsider.com tournament, otherwise known as the only tournament that matters in March, and clinched the second postseason title won by an Ivy League team on the court at Levian Gymnasium at the end of March. Of course, one day after that, Kyle Smith decided that it was time to return to the West Coast and left for San Francisco. The core of that team has also been decimated. Maudo Lowe, one of the greatest players in the history of Columbia, spent the NBA Summer League with the Philadelphia 76ers, catching passes from Ben Simmons, and then signed a contract with Brose Bamberg Buckets in the German Bundesliga-type situation, I don't know what the actual name of the league is. Grant Mullins, with 1 year of eligibility left, has transferred to the University of California, where he will be playing basketball. And then Alex Rosenberg signed with a Israeli team, and Isaac Cohen's basketball career ended. I don't really know what more to say there. So in comes a new cast of characters. Leading the way is former Columbia assistant and former head coach at NGIT, Jim Engels. Engels turned around that NGIT program, which won one game in his first year, and then just a few short years later was knocking off Michigan. So a reputation for giant killers that he shares with Kyle Smith. Ivy Hoops Online has actually done two interviews with Engels since he took the job. I talked to him in April, and Sam Tidings, a good friend of mine and a writer on the site, talked to him last week. You'd find both of those sort of comments if you go back through the IHO archives. Good preview of the season by Sam there as well.
The most notable piece is that Engels' last game at NJIT was
losing to Columbia in the semifinals of the CIT.
Yes, it was.
See, I thought I had covered everything, but I did not. I have a lot of thoughts I want to share about this Columbia team, but I want to get everyone's opinion first, and I'll sort of summarize. So let's start with I've been kind of starting with Mike a lot. So let's start with George. This is a Columbia team in transition, losing their best, probably some would say their best four players. And also there are some pretty strong rumors that Kyle Kaslin will not play this year due to a foot injury. They are unconfirmed, but based on sort of what I am hearing, it seems clear and convincing that he won't play this year. What do you think of Columbia's chances this year, George?
I think Columbia's chances this year will give head coach Jim Engels another chance to come from way back and maybe in his second year make a lot of progress. Columbia is not going to do much this year in the Ivy League.
Wow, okay. That's the sort of opinion that gets you kicked off this podcast. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was interesting in the couple Ivy Hoops Online interviews, and I think there was some comments on one of the message boards. It seems like Coach Engels kind of lowering expectations. You know, he talks about this as being a big team, and he's used to small, fast teams, and so he's kind of downplaying the ability to kind of like merge the two styles together for this year. So I sadly for you, I guess I'm going with George and thinking a little bit more on the negative side than the positive side for the Lions this year. And if Penn can, you know, do a good job at Columbia for the first time and not lose by 25 points, that'd be, you know, great for me.
Traitors, a lot of you. Mike, what are your thoughts on Columbia? They are, I mean, everything I think Rob and George are saying is totally fair. That Columbia's lost a ton of pieces and bringing in a new coach. You alluded to the fact that Penn is not your number four team in the Ivy League this year. Is Columbia, or have we still not gotten to your number four team?
I don't know that I have a number four team. I just think I'm reticent to pick any of these teams there.
It's a five-way tie for fifth.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just leave that one. It's a bye for Princeton. They can advance to the final. I mean, you know, when you look at Columbia, I've always been very critical of the fact that this team has not been able to play any defense. It was pretty clear that, you know, Kyle Smith, that wasn't his MO. You know, and frankly, this team, I don't think is going to get better defensively this year. I really think that the loss, I mean, we'll operate on the assumption that there's going to be no Kyle Kaslin. That's a big problem for them. Not a particularly deep team after losing all of those seniors. That's going to be noticed on both ends of the floor. I think that Columbia will have some fun games. I think that this team can put up some points. But the idea of having a big team and the fact that big team that, you know, isn't the fun, fast team that Engels is used to, and the fact that big team is actually better offensively than defensively is discordant to me. That's not the way it should be. I'm nervous. I think that I think Columbia's going to be pretty high variance this year. I think they're going to have some nice shooting nights. They're going to have some good defensive – oh, sorry, good offensive outputs that may surprise some people, keep them in some weird games. But this team is going to be atrocious defensively, and I think that's going to hurt them on average. The Castlin loss, I think I had Columbia as my fourth team, but his loss now, I think they fall back to the pack again. A pack that probably Yale is in too, so I think you just now have like six teams that really are looking at third through eighth. It's a mess.
Well, this has been fun. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I tend to sort of agree. I think talking to definitely hearing directly from Coach Engels, you do get the sense that it's going to take some time for this team to click. Not a particularly strong class developed this senior year. They have a big front court behind Luke Petrasek and Jeff Kobe. You're hoping for some production from some guys like Chris McComber, who is like bad at basketball. You need Connor Voss to also not be bad at basketball. Those are sort of tough things to do. And then you have Lucas Meisner, a sophomore with, I think, probably the highest upside on the team. And then you get into a lot of question marks at the guard positions. Nate Hickman from Wilmington, Delaware, so important to note that, is probably going to start, I would imagine. There's going to be a lot of competition to play alongside him. C.J. Davis is a name we've heard. Rodney Hunter, who basically redshirted last year, is another. And then Mike Smith, the freshman, who is like 3 feet tall but is apparently very good, is likely to see some minutes as well. You know, it is definitely an enigma because no team, I believe I'm correct in saying this, no team leaves more minutes on the table than Columbia does in terms of you have to fill Mauto, you have to fill Rosenberg, you have to fill Grant Mullins, yeah, and Isaac Cohen, who never came off the floor. So I think it'll be fun, though. I think there's something to be said for it's always fun to watch a new coach kind of do his thing. And Engels is a good coach. He wants to push the tempo. You know, they're going to lose twice, 88-83 to Princeton again this year. Like, I've already resigned myself to it. So, but hopefully not in as heartbreaking a fashion. Let's keep rolling because we want to make sure that we get a we talk about every team within the hour we have and a couple last minute questions. We've lost George from the call because this is the first episode of the year and the first episode of the year is always a disaster. We'll keep going though and talk about the sixth place team, which I have to admit I think is Dartmouth, but I don't remember.
That sounds right. Yeah.
That was not a pause for comic effect. That was all of us genuinely trying to remember who was picked.
It's just Dartmouth, I don't care which order they were all in.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. So let's talk Dartmouth really quick. Dartmouth fired Paul Cormier, which I thought was a strange decision, and replaced him with someone, and now they're going to try to win more basketball games. Will they? It's a question for either of you.
I'll let Mike handle it first.
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to win more basketball games. I think that, again, like, it's a team that has some nice pieces and I think has more star power than your average Dartmouth team. I think they're going to need to rely on some freshmen to help out. I really think the loss of Connor Bame is going to be noticed. You know, he really, if you watch the Dartmouth game, you could miss him the entire game. But he did a lot of like garbage guy things that really were important for this team. So I think that's going to be a tough spot to fill. A lot of people believe that losing Malik Gill is going to be addition by subtraction. He always tortured Harvard. So, you know, I have a different view of him. But you know, I actually think that, you know, there are pieces here. I don't know much about McLaughlin as a coach. I don't know, like, styles or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see how they develop. But, you know, when you have Miles Wright and you have Evan Boudreau, you have a chance. That's star power that, again, a Dartmouth team doesn't normally have. I think they'll be in the mix for that fourth spot, but I do think there are going to be a lot of teams in the Ivies this year that finish 6-8, 5-9, and and, you know, they'll probably be a 12-ish win team or something.
I guess I'm probably a little more pessimistic on Dartmouth. For me, it seems to start with McLaughlin. Of all the new or relatively new coaches in the Ivy League, he has no experience in the league. So just kind of getting used to the weekends and the schedule may need a little adjustment. Plus, I thought he made a couple odd comments during the recent teleconference, and one of them was that he kind of he evaluates the team based on how other teams are defining them, and I kind of thought that was weird. Like, why wouldn't you define your team yourself? Like, why are you letting other people do that? And the other thing he mentioned was trying to work on fatigue and trying to make sure that these guys could handle being on the road and playing back-to-back games on the weekends. And I just kind of thought, between that and him not really knowing the recruits and not knowing the existing players, it just doesn't seem like a good fit in this first year. So I kind of think it's going to be a bit of a tough year. Of course, Evan Boudreaux's phenomenal. And Miles Wright is excellent, so you do have two great pieces. But outside of that, I don't know what's going on. So I think that they're going to have a tough time this year.
And I think there's a lot of support for your view when you look at the fact that what really buoyed this team last year was the fact that they were average defensively, national average defensively. And that'll keep you sort of in that low 200 range in the national rankings. But that was really built on the strength of having Malik Gill – I think he had the fourth highest steal rate in the country last year. So really churning the ball turnover-wise. And then, again, free throw defense, we talk about this a lot, but, like, that's probably going to revert back. And this team, this Dartmouth team, had a real problem sending other teams to the line. So, you know, that defensive number last year around the national average might be a little bit false when you go ahead and you look at where they actually will probably end up this year. And if so, they were bad offensively. This team could the bottom could fall out pretty quickly for them. So there is a lot of support for this notion that they may struggle.
Yeah, I thought it was, I personally thought it was a big surprise that they let Cormier go, possibly making the change to work out in the long run. But Hanover is a hard place to have success, and you can't say he hasn't been recruiting some really excellent players. I think about guys like Evan Boudreaux and Miles Wright, who I think is overrated, but is still a good basketball player. It'll be interesting to see what McLaughlin can do up there. The third of the troika of new coaches in the league, quite a high number this year, is in Cornell, where Princeton assistant Brian Earle has taken the helm after the, what's the right adjective, lackluster reign of Bill Courtney. I don't know, does anyone have a better word?
That sounds about right.
The lackluster reign of Bill Courtney comes to an end, and so Rob, you look at Cornell pretty closely. What's the prospectus for the boys in red this year?
You know, it's interesting. Brian Earle's for me, I was saying to Mike recently, like, discipline's the main word I think of. You know, with Brian Earle, he's such a structured player coach. And that's the last thing Cornell was for the last 6 years. It was basically like give one person the ball and let them go. Outside of Sean Miller, you know, like not much rebounding going on the last few years. So I think that one of the things I saw in the scrimmage was the idea of sharing the ball. So Stone Gettings is a sophomore. He's getting a lot of looks down low. Also, he can bring it out to the three. So could Donovan Wright, who's a sophomore who missed all of last year. The team starts with Matt Morgan, all-time freshman Ivy League scorer. I think he's going to be asked to handle the ball, pass the ball a little bit more, work on his assists. But he's a great place to start. He's a great player to start with. Robert Hatter's in his last year. He's great and he's frustrating. So if Brian Earle can find a way to maximize the good Hatter, that's great. But he's got to find a way to just kind of like bring him back, take him out of a game when he's going off and not really helping the team. He's got Joel Davis, who I think led the league in field goal percentage last year. He can come off the bench. You've got JoJo Fallis, who can hit the three. So they're gonna work the ball around, hopefully have some half court sets and rebound a little bit better, but really have a more efficient shooting from 3-point area.
Robert Hatter, easily one of my least favorite basketball players of all time. I think he's got talent, but I say this every time someone mentions his name. It's just good. It's good to get back in the old rhythms, right? So we're gonna do a new season, and so I have to remind everyone, like, what are Peter's weird idiosyncrasies? I don't like Robert Hatter. I'm not a big fan of Mekhi Mason, and I'm always gonna root for Columbia. Oh, and Harper's terrible. Mike, we're kind of running short on time. Let me get your quick Cornell synopsis.
Going to be very interesting to see what happens. This is the exact opposite team that I think Brian Earl would have wanted to inherit. I mean, they do almost everything the opposite of the way Brian Earl would want it done. And I'm very excited to see how quickly, much like Donahue at Penn, how quickly he can install his system and whether or not his system looks anything like the typical Princeton system. I think it's going to be a struggle for them, but, you know, kudos to him if he can get them playing his way very quickly.
And then the last team in the conference, the Brown Bears. We talked about this on our last episode last year. Some thought that Brown might be the fourth team to make a coaching change. It didn't end up doing it, but you have to think the tightrope is pretty thin for Mike Martin up in Providence. The Bears, not a lot of talent. They're losing Cedric Kwakamensa, and will struggle this year. Is that fair to say, Mike?
They may struggle a bit. I think that all of the talk around Mike Martin is incredibly unfair. I think it doesn't really apply the context of the situation. You need resources to compete. I think for what Mike is given, I think he does a fantastic job recruiting. I think he has a style which has proven to be, you know, able to produce results at times there. And frankly, I think he's overachieved relative to the resources. So, yeah, I think they're my pick for eighth this year. I think they could rise up, you know, in the sixth, fifth. I think they're the least likely team to make that tournament. But, you know, I really think very highly of the job that Mike has done there with the resources that he has. They'll be a very, very dynamic offensive team, and they may struggle at times greatly defensively. We've heard that story with some of the other teams we talked about tonight.
Yeah, you know, I think they certainly, like Dartmouth, they have some good pieces. Blackman's an excellent point guard. Spieth, inconsistent, but when he's on, he does a great job. Hobby can hit from the three, and Akoli did a nice job last year. Defensively tough. They're losing a lot of rebounds with Kwakamensa's league graduation. They've got a bunch of, you know, freshmen, including Juwan Howard's son, who's come in. I guess the key is to see how much experience they can get those guys and, you know, how much they can develop. I don't know if Mike Martin will have the time to develop these guys, because I agree with you. I think this is – I don't know what his contract is, but I would think that a 5 or 6 year contract would probably – like Bill Courtney would kind of be where he's at. So could be a tough year, but I do think they have more pieces than Dartmouth, so I think they might jump into seventh. And the way this league goes, who knows? They could end up in third.
Well, I mean, I do think it is fair to say that Martin has performed well relative to resources. And I guess you have almost the opposite decision was made in Dartmouth, where they said, I think Paul Cormier overperformed compared to his resources, and he was let go.
Drastically.
And so it is that question, can making a coaching change get you to that next step? Or, you know, there's almost, you know, the likelihood that you go back the other direction if you change a coach's overperforming. But what is what I think is the negative side about Mike Martin that we've seen difficult is how many players have left that program over the last few years, talented players. And it's been in a couple different years where they've lost guys, even sometimes mid-season, just very difficult to deal with. But you wonder whether, you know, at a certain point, that's the sort of thing coaches take responsibility for. You know, one is a data point, and, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 becomes more of a pattern. So that's kind of the issue with Mike Martin right now. Obviously, no one wants to see a coach get fired, but he, I would guess, has the hottest seat in the Ivy League right now. So we have kicked it all the way around the horn, gentlemen. We are we're excited. So let's do this. I have two questions for each of you, and I'll ask the first one first. So, Rob, what is, in your opinion, the most surprising thing that will happen in the Ivy League this year? Something you see coming that no one else does.
No, for me, I can't get past the idea of looking at last year and also looking at the recent news, like off the court issues. I think you know, with Montague last year, Xavier Eglin from Cornell, both involved in sexual assault issues, the recent stuff with Harvard, with the scouting reports for the men's soccer team and the men's cross-country team, I just can't shake the idea that something is going to happen, like a real X-factor thing.
Well, and hopefully, certainly in that case, hopefully we do not see anything like that, because
right, absolutely.
What came out of Harvard a couple weeks ago is very disturbing, and obviously quite a tough situation last year as well. Mike, what is your sort of, what do you see coming that no one else does?
It's hard. I think I would have answered this question a couple days ago. Would have been, I think that we're going to see two bids this year. I think that Yale, as a supporting pusher, really, you know, their loss of Mason is going to hurt that big time, because that's just going to be fewer scalps to go around and fewer quality wins to point to as a league. I'll stick with it, but I don't feel as good about it as I did when this league was fully healthy.
Well, that leads pretty nicely to my second question, which is, I guess I would say a two-part question, which is, will the number one regular season team win the tournament, and will there be two bids this year? So, Mike, why don't you answer that, because you've already kind of gotten there.
I think that obviously it's a very difficult question. I don't know what's going to happen with this tournament. I do think that the one or the two will win the tournament. And I think that's important, because that is sort of what everyone is afraid of, that a three or a four will get hot for a weekend for two games and upset things. And I think that the one or the two will win, and I don't think the league will see any seed drop lower than a seed line or two. So I think that we're looking at, like, you know, maybe a 12 to 14, like a 14 being our floor. So that's sort of the way I'll dodge that question, is by saying that we're going to have a really qualified team making the tournament. Two bids, again, I just talked about it. I think that I felt a lot better about it when Yale had Mason. But we'll know quickly, because, you know, the games are up front for these teams. The games are in November. So if Harvard and Princeton can grab a couple, game on. If they can't, like last year, you know, we're going to be looking at RPI numbers and begging and hoping, and we know how that turns out. So we'll know pretty early whether or not we're going to be in line for two bids.
So, Rob, you have 1 minute to answer that question.
Sure. You know, like listening to Mike's comments earlier, you know, I think Princeton has a strong opportunity to run the table in the league. If they face Harvard a third time, Harvard certainly can win that game on a neutral court. If that happens, Harvard gets the automatic bid. Princeton has a little bit higher RPI in other rankings and sneaks in as that second. It's tough, but I think there's the right now an outside possibility.
All right, well, that'll do it for the first episode of On the Vine this year. I'm glad we got through it only with, like, one guy getting disconnected three times and then another guy disappearing entirely. It's, you know, pretty good, all things being considered.
Because I'm here.
It's because Michael James just ruins everything. When he tries to call into this show, it's a disaster. I would like to thank Mike for coming on the show. If you're listening to this, you almost certainly know this already. You can follow him on Twitter, at IVBBall, where he will just, like, really annoy you all season long. But it's invaluable, invaluable information. Thank you for joining us, Mike.
Happy to be here.
Rob Brown, a Ivy Hoops Online writer. You can find his stuff on the website. Rob, thank you for joining the show.
You're welcome. Thanks.
And thank you to George Clark /Toothless Tiger, who got disconnected earlier, but as always, love hearing what George has to say. I've been Peter Andrews. Mike Tony is my usual co-host. He'll be back. So just how we do the podcast, we are basically not going to do a podcast for the next 2 months. This is a sort of season preview, and then we're going to let non-conference play run its course. I have finals. Mike is busy. It's simpler to just get back in the swing of things weekly, probably on Thursday nights, once Ivy League play rolls around, once the 14-game tournament, or I guess just the 14-game season now. I'm not sure what to call it. Once that gets underway in January, we'll be back here every week, the regular cast of characters popping in and out and also disconnecting from the internet to talk to you about Ivy League basketball. As always, you can follow our website on Twitter at Ivy Hoops Online, or you can visit us at ivyhoopsonline.com. That's where you can get all the most up-to-date information about the Ivy League. for my money, you know, I'm biased because I've written for the site for 3 years now, but it's the best possible resource out there if you're a fan covering the Ivy League and wants to hear about it from a fan's perspective. We got some great writers, and I hope you'll check it out. So that's been it for tonight. I'm Peter Andrews saying good night, and enjoy basketball's return on Friday.